Okay, we're going to get it more in the scriptures as we get going. We're going to get into the first chapter of Genesis. We're going to go through the Genesis flood. We're going to go through Psalm 104, various things we're going to go through. All right, I have one other thing here in reference to Ken Hovind, because it kind of ties this whole thing together a little bit with this Institute for Creation Research and Answers in Genesis, and all of these somewhat independent guys like Ken Hovind, who's only slightly connected with them, but everybody considers him one of the greatest, and so on. Ken Hovind is so arrogant and bombastic. He just tries to make anybody who believes in evolution or whatever just feel like a total idiot, you know. He's got this little thing where he says, well, you believe we came from a rock, you know. And, no, I don't believe we came from a rock. Yeah, you do. And then he's got his little way of twisting it around. So you really do believe we came from a rock. You know, so I think God created us, you think we came from a rock. You know, like he's really putting them down and stuff. But Ken Hovind he goes on tour all around the country, all around the world, kind of like this, you know, Bill Weiss, and he's 23 minutes in hell now. You know, he's a big speaker everywhere, spreading the word. And Ken has his little picture show, and he's got all these little jokes and everything. But he doesn't understand science. He was a science teacher in school, you know. But he has no PhDs, that's all. We went through all that baloney with him, right? Fraud, total fraud. But he is still promoting the same young earth theories that have fallen by the wayside last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. He's still promoting them. To the point that Answers in Genesis and Dr. Weiland and Dr. Ham and Dr. Safari, you know, our list of eminent people that I showed you, they had to write in their own publication and Answers in Genesis an article called Maintaining Creationist Integrity. And so all these young earthers are showing, they did a back and forth with Kent Hovind on all this stuff that he's teaching, and they're saying, you can't teach that stuff anymore. The scientists are laughing us to scorn. But Kent maintains, no, it's still, you know, they haven't proven that wrong, you know. They haven't proven that Superman didn't come from the planet Vulcan or whatever it was, you know. Krypton. Kryptonite, whatever. You can't prove a negative anyway. It's so stupid. So they write this thing, and I'm going to go through some of it because it's kind of funny. Here we have one group of young creationists telling another one that you got to stop teaching all this young earth nonsense because the scientists are laughing us to scorn. Ken Hovind. NASA computers in calculating the position of the planets found the missing day and 40 minutes, proving Joshua's long day and Hezekiah's sundial movement of Joshua 10 and 2 Kings 20. Answers in Genesis says, this story is an urban myth. NASA never proved it. He says, it's a myth. It's an urban myth. Hovind teaches it wherever he goes. Ken Hovind, the mammoth was not designed for cold weather, a cold weather animal. In other words, we find these mammoths buried all up in the Siberian, Alaska, and all these places. But they're foreign. They were washed there by Noah's flood and buried and flash frozen. See? They never belonged up there in that cold weather. Answers in Genesis says, this ignores the definite adaptations to cold, such as woolly coats and small surface areas of ears, trunks, and tail, all of which minimize heat loss. The world's leading creationist research on the Ice Age and mammoths, Michael Ord, has published powerful reasons for putting aside some of the traditional arguments about snap freezing based on first-hand research. For example, the undigested food in the stomach is easily explained by the fact that the elephant's stomach holds their food at bay, not a digestive organ. The undigested stomach contains, were found in mastodons, remains in unfrozen soil as much as in more southern latitudes. So, say, you can't teach that. It doesn't work. It makes us look foolish. Kent Holman. Casta di Dola and Calaveras human remains in old strata invalidate the geologic column. Answers in geology. These remains are not natural burials. This is a classic example of Clayton's refutation. That is, the refutation you make when you're not making a refutation, but still giving the impression that you are on the higher ground. But the truth of the matter is, they criticize Ken Hovind for doing that. Answers in Genesis does exactly the same thing. Ken Hovind, the Japanese trawler, Zayuya Maru, whatever, caught a dead pleistosaur near New Zealand. Answers in Genesis. Interpretive sketches and eyewitnesses' reports of the decomposing male remains are the evidence so far overwhelmingly favoring a basking shark, not a dinosaur. So maybe you've heard some of the, have any of you heard any of these so far, or are these all brand new to you? Kent, the second law of thermodynamics began at the fall. Answers in Genesis. Death began at the fall, not the second law of thermodynamics. They're both wrong. Kent says, if we evolved from apes, why are there still apes here today? Isn't that clever? If we came from apes, how come there's still apes? Answers in Genesis. Evolutionists teach that humans and apes had a common ancestor, not that humans evolved from apes. Kent, women have one less rib than men. I find it hard to believe that anybody who can walk and chew gum at the same time would believe something as stupid as that. He teaches it.
I can't walk and chew gum.
Not me. They say, answers in Genesis. Dishonest skeptics are usually the only ones who use this ridiculous argument to discredit creationists. Kent, Archaeopteryx is a fraud. Answers in Genesis. Archaeopteryx is a genuine fossil of an unusual bird. Kent. There are no beneficial mutations. Answers in Genesis. We have yet to find mutation that increase genetic information, even in those rare instances where the mutation confers an advantage. There are advantageous mutations. Kent. The Earth's axis was vertical before the flood. Answers in Genesis. There is no basis for this claim. Kent answers back. I don't think it's possible to know the truth on this one. He says that to everyone. He said, well, I think the jury's still out on this one. Oh, he won't acknowledge any one of these as being wrong.
But don't they have the same agenda?
But one is saying that the other one's still arguing these stupid arguments that have been disproven for 10 and 20 years. It's time to give them up. They want to move on to better ones, see? Better ones.
Right.
Our comment, there is no basis for this claim, means exactly that, that there is no reason to believe that it was vertical. It does not mean that it can be proven that it was not. It is, in the similar vein, it is logically possible that the core of Pluto is made of green cheese. But there's no reason to believe it. Kent, Biloxi tracks prove that humans and dinosaurs coexisted together. A answers in Genesis. Some of the alleged human tracks may be artifacts of erosion of dinosaur tracks obscuring the claw marks. And others are fraud. They're man-carved. They're proof of that. But Ken says, with that said, I've been to Biloxi four times and have seen the evidence firsthand. Answers in Genesis. We have had several Answers in Genesis researches. The evidence of genuine tracks is not in dispute. Where we urge great caution is using the evidence as proof that there were humans, that they are of human origin. I don't know. Maybe I... That's a couple points. Earth's division in the days of Peleg, Genesis 10:23, refers to the catastrophic splitting of the continents. Answers in Genesis. The earth that was divided was the same earth that spoke only one language. The earth refers in context to the people of the earth, not the planet earth. Kent. The Septuagint records the correct Genesis chronology. Answers in Genesis. The Septuagint chronologies are demonstrably inflated and contain obvious errors that have Methuselah living 17 years after the flood. Kent. The phrase science falsely so called in 1 Timothy 6:2 refers to evolution. That email that I'm going to do later, you know, that sort of, you know, he says the same thing. He calls it, you know, God calls this science falsely. So there's no such verse in the Bible. It just means knowledge. I think that's what they say. Answers in Genesis. The original Greek word translated science is gnosis, and in its context refers to knowledge. That was the key in the mystery religions and so on. It's nothing to do with evolution or false science. Ron Wyatt has found Noah's Ark. Ron Wyatt is one of these young earth creationists who has a lot of stuff on the internet. He has his own museum. He claims to have found Noah's Ark. He got all kinds of artifacts from Noah's Ark and everything. Total bogus nonsense. All of it. Ken Hovind says, Ron has found Noah's Ark. Answers in Genesis says, this claimed ark shape is a natural geological formation caused by a mud flow. Kent. Ron Wyatt has found much archaeological proof of the Bible. Answers in Genesis. There is not the slightest substantiation for Wyatt's claims. Just excuses to explain away why the evidence is missing. So you see, there's no honor among thieves. Ken Hovind says, many of Carl Bunk's creation evidences... Wait. I can't even read that. This was done in light blue ink on the internet, and I've gone through I don't know, hundreds of dollars worth of ink cartridges to print this stuff out. And sometimes, like, this is all in red ink because the, you know, black ink was gone. But I use every bit out of it I can, you know. Kent Hovind says, there was no rain before the flood. Answers in Genesis. There is no direct teaching of this in the scriptures, so there's no reason to be dogmatic about it. Ken says, natural selection is tautology. Do you know what a tautology is? Like people that are over 6 feet are taller than people that are only 5 feet. Well, duh. So it's a... natural selection is a tautology, survival of the fittest. The fittest survive. Well, duh, did we think the weakest survive and the fittest die? You know? Answers in Genesis. Maybe it is, but it's still a fact. See, these people, they can even be clever sometimes when they're dealing with the truth. When they're dealing with the truth, they can see that this Holman guy is off his scientific rocker. Ken, gold chains have been found in coal. Ever heard that one before? And bells and pots in coal veins. So how could coal be billions of years old?
The evidence is strictly anecdotal.
Ken says, I disagree and cover this in the Hovind theory. Oh, well, if it's in the Hovind theory, I couldn't be false, could it? Said, oh, it's in the Hovind. You know, so I said, well, I taught that myself. Oh, well, then I guess it's true. I taught this in the Hovind theory. Only one gold chain has been found in coal, to my knowledge. On June 11, 1891, the Morrisville Times reported a curious find was brought to light by Mrs. S.W. Culp last Tuesday morning as she was breaking a lump of coal apart, embedded in a circular shape and a small gold chain about 10 inches in length, an antique and quite and quaint workmanship. Answers in Genesis. This is exactly what is meant by anecdotal evidence. The word is derived from anecdote, meaning story. This is a story, but no coal sticking to a chain. Ken says, this is a book, I guess, The Hidden History of the Human Race, Michael Cremo, page 113, says as well that an iron pot found in coal, 1912, at the Municipal Electric Plant in Thomas, Oklahoma, now in Creation Evidence Museum. Answers in Genesis. Again, there is an iron pot minus the coal in the museum. But no evidence apart from anecdotal that the coal contained the pot. And Ken says, and it was on the sole of a shoe. Answers in Genesis. Presumably a shoe. 10. American Weekly, section of the New York Sunday American, Dr. J.W. Ballou. The stitching pattern was clearly visible, the twist of the threads in the rock was 248 million years old. The Hidden History of the Human Race, Michael Sonson, page Sonson, Hidden Answers in Genesis. Again, we ask, where is the artifact showing the association between the pot, or the soul, rather, and the coal? 10. A bell was found by W.B. In West Virginia by Mr. Newton Anderson inside a lump of coal in 1944. He still has the bell. Answers in Genesis. Same again, exactly. There's any number of spoons, pots, and so on. All anecdotal. They said they'll come from coal. But how can one use this legitimately to the heathen in apologetics when there is no association between the item and the coal? Plate tectonics is a fallacious. Answers in Genesis. Dr. John Baumgartner's work on catastrophic plate and the flood, see plate tectonics. However, AGI recognizes that some reputable creation scientists disagree with plate tectonics. Kent says, this needs to be defined better. The plates are moving, but this does not prove that they have always been moving. How do you make that stuff up? How do you even talk to somebody like that? I think that's enough. That's enough for Ken Hovind. Bye.
Yeah.
You were fun, but you're gone. Like the dust mop, you're gone. And get me a swisher. Oh, gosh. Okay. Back to my email. Okay, and we'll take this through the afternoon a while. We'll get into evening and morning. What is the day? We discussed a little bit of this last night. Oh, we discussed a little bit of this last night. Excuse me. What? In the lobby, yeah. I'm getting little throbs here. You know, people think they know things, you know. They just know that they know, you know. Like, how long is a day? Well, everybody knows how long a day is. Somebody tell me how long a day is. 24 hours. Let's see your hands. How many believe it's 24 hours is a day?
9 hours.
Just a day. A day. Well, we're going to see some interesting things. All young earth creationists believe it. A day is 24 hours, it says. And he did this and he did that, and it was so, and then that was the third day. That was the third or the fourth or the fifth 24 hour day. This doesn't say 24 hour day. Okay. I tell you what, maybe some of you brought a concordant with you. I would like somebody, the word day is found in the Bible about 2,200 times. I would like anyone in here to find me a verse of scripture where the Bible talks about a 24-hour day. 1 out of 2,200. Show me one verse that in context or any way you want to say it, this means 24 hours. Show me one.
The people rested on the seventh day.
The people rested on the... Is that a verse? The people rested on the seventh day. Okay?
I would think that'd be 24.
Could be.
Right.
Yes?
What about when Jesus looked at the fig tree and then the next day he went and looked at it again? Would that be a normal day?
Not necessarily. Okay, let's take that whole thing in context. Before they rested the seventh day, what did they do?
They worked.
They worked. How long?
6 days.
Right. So, as long as they worked each day, they were to rest on the seventh day. Would that be correct? Okay. How long did they work each day?
Not 24 hours.
Not 24 hours! If they worked 6 days of 24 hours, they'd be damn tired by the time the Sabbath came around. So, you might say, but didn't they also rest the night time of the Sabbath?
Right.
Yes. But they also rest at the night time of the 6 work days. Although I won't fault you on that one. I mean, that could be legitimately used to mean 24-hour day. Yeah, it could. Someone else?
How many days did Jesus fast for?
He didn't fast for 40 days.
That's right.
And the reason, it's very explicit how long he fasted. And that's why it doesn't use days. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. If 40 days equal 40 24-hour periods, you don't have to add and nights. No, we can't count that one. I mean, not specifically. In a general sense, you could, because from the one sunset to the next sunset, he did not eat. But because the scriptures themselves know the meaning of the word day, so did you think he didn't fast all day and eat all night? They had to tell you he fasted for 40 days and also during the night. I mean, here. The word day, meaning a 24-hour lunar cycle, is almost never used in the scriptures. Never. And when it is, even then it uses some buffers to be sure you understand what it says. When it says you're to keep the Day of Atonement, it says from even on, even until even.
So you're not confused that you go all day without eating and say, oh, well, we eat all night. See? No. God meant it to be 24 hours from even, not until morning or from morning until even, but from even unto even, 24 hours. But it had to state that because if somebody was just zeroing in on the real meaning of the word day, they'd say, wait a minute. All right, we'll fast all day. And then we'll go feast all night. He didn't say we couldn't feast at night. He said we had to go all day. Let's get more specific. How many hours are in a day?
12.
How many hours did Jesus Christ say are in a day? Did Jesus Christ say, are there not 24 hours in the day?
Right.
You know the scripture like that? Jesus Christ said, are there not 12 hours in the day? A day is 12 hours of light. That's a day. 12 hours of darkness is not day. It's night.
Right.
Now we're going to get into that in some more detail, and you're going to learn a lot about these creation days. Listen, I have some stuff up here. No, I'm going to talk about that after I close, because then he's going to run out of time. Okay. All right. So we have these five theories presented. These are the best there are. The Earth's magnetic field, okay? And Humphreys, Dr. Humphreys, Dr. Russell Humphreys has proven this and shown that through his theory of the Earth's magnetic field, that the Earth cannot be more than 10,000 years old. Now, first of all, this is not Humphreys' theory. This is the theory of a man by the name of Barnes. He took 25 measurements of the Earth's magnetic field, okay? And then he started playing with these and came up with this theory. But the experts say there's several fatal errors in Thomas Barnes' work. And then they go through them. Now this gets fairly technical. It involves formulas and stuff like that. So it's not that, you know, easy for me to try to explain this, but there's some of it in more layman's language. All right, here's one problem. It seems that the dipole field has gone uphill at times. Studies of the magnetic field are recorded in dated rocks and pottery have shown that the dipole movement actually fluctuates over periods of a few thousand years and that decreases in field intensity are eventually followed by increases. For example, the archaeomagnetic data show that the dipole was about 20% weaker than the present field 6,500 years ago and about 45% stronger than the present field about 3,000 years ago. Quite clearly, the dipole field has increased at times. So when you take these known facts into consideration, this theory just falls. It's just one way of saying, wait a minute, this is doing this. This is the same thing as the rainfall, you know, or the snow, you know. It's snowing, you know, so many inches an hour. At this rate, the snow will be 18 miles deep in less than a year. But it doesn't snow at that rate for a whole... It's all nonsense, all of these arguments. Point two is by itself is fatal to Barnes' idea in that Barnes was not actually plotting a decline in total field strength. Evidence shows that the dipole has increased in strength at times and so on. All I want to show you is there are real scientists who have taken these things to task and said, this does not follow scientific protocol. They've taken shortcuts and made diversions, and they've done things that cannot be substantiated. Barnes simply ignores the fact that the Earth's magnetic polarity has reversed itself on numerous occasions. That fact alone absolutely is fatal to every fiber of Barnes' argument. But see, when these guys with, some of them with legitimate doctor's degrees, you know, present this stuff in technical terms, they bamboozle the people. And they think, well, this guy, he's got to work it out. Somebody gave me a paper and they said, at the last conference in Mobile, and because they knew I was going to talk about this in the next conference, they said, one scientist worked out a mathematical formula proving the Earth is only 6,000 years old. Oh, really? I mean, it's just nonsense. But they believed it. Why? Because some scientist said he had a formula. Well, let 20 or 30 other scientists look at it. See what they think.
Okay. Here's just a little excerpt from a paper just on this subject. We've already seen that all of his ideas regarding reversals, field intensity from archaeomagnetic strata, and the fact the lack of evidence for a global flood is based on bad data, or even worse, invented data. Humphreys took Barnes' idea and he tried to get it even more bamboozled, and now they call it Humphreys. It was Barnes' idea. Humphreys can calculate energies until the cows come home, but the archaeomagnetic data that are available indicate that there were no magnetic reversals in the past 5,000 years. They are simply an artificial invention of Humphreys. Creationists and Magnetic Field Decay by Lenny Flank. Dr. Thomas Barnes, doctor is an honorary one, the creationist physicist who served as the head of the Institute for Creation Research, Skagit School, and so on, is now being championed by Russell Humphreys. Barnes made assumptions that all the non-dipolar measurements constituted meaningless noise and asserted that only the dipole elements of the magnetic field are generated by the core. He further concluded that because of the measured decreases in the field strength, this dipole must be decaying exponentially with a half-life of approximately 1,400 years. Thus, Barnes calculated about 10,000 years ago the Earth's magnetic field would have been so strong that life would have been impossible. Therefore, he concluded the Earth cannot be more than 10,000 years old. And how does Humphrey know that the magnetic field of the Earth decayed slowly for exactly 1656 years, or that the Earth's magnetic field was produced by atoms that were spun that with their spin axis aligned at the time of creation? Not through any scientific data. The same observatory measurements that show that the dipole moment has decreased since 1800s also shows that the decrease has almost been completely balanced by the increase of strength of the total observed field, which has remained almost constant. Now that's by real scientists, Dalrymple, can the Earth be dated by its magnetic field? Barnes also presents no evidence whatsoever to support his assertion that the magnetic field has been decaying exponentially and so on. So these scientists take this theory apart, point by point by point. It doesn't fly. There is no justification whatsoever for Barnes and Humphrey to attempt to extrapolate their magnetic measurements for the last 150 years or so back to the moment of creation. This is apparent that the Earth's magnetic field is not decaying and that it routinely fluctuates and even occasionally reverses itself. The creationist magnetic field decay hypothesis is simply not capable of giving us any scientific estimate of the age of the Earth. But yet, this is one of the best. This is my top five. One of the very best. What am I doing now, babe? I'm drinking this. It's got my oils in it. Okay, thank you. Yum. Yeah. Okay, I've got. Okay. Subject: magnetic field by Steel Price. Same thing. Goes through it. It's just bunk. Russell Humphreys accepts a core current-based magnitude field and archaeomagnetic measurements of the magnetic field based on measurements of human artifacts, and concludes the several reversals of the magnetic field occurred during the biblical flood. Such rapid, month-long variations contradict measurements of the conductivity of the Earth's mantle. They're inconsistent with all the basic physics of magnetism. While short-term variations have been shown to be due to a variety of forces, the long-term million-year variations in field intensity and even reversals are modeled as due to changes in electrical currents within the liquid core of the Earth. So it all depends how far you want to go and how much you want to read. To disprove some of these, because some of them are a little bit technical. And we're going to go through a little bit more of it, but then, when we get through this, we've got some more yet, but then we're going to go into, I got a handout for everybody. Okay, looks like this, except that mine is colored inside, and yours isn't. There's a reason for that. About $1,000 for the reason. But yours will have the same colored, pretty colored front. This front shows the different geological ages and areas of just North America where these are all were all fine and where some of these come to the surface and so on. Okay. But here you can see all these mathematical formulas going through point by point by point, showing that, you know, neither Barnes nor Humphreys has a clue as to what you're talking about this. In this argument, it says he was even able to correctly predict the magnetic field of two planets before they were even measured. He says in here, all Humphreys has to do is come up with a dipole at creation that is about the same as Saturn's is now, and the result is going to be very nearly right. In other words, any scientist could have done the same thing. He didn't come up with some great scheme based on his. Yeah, any scientist could have done that. It's not some accomplishment. Okay, I'm not going to say any more on that. Okay, so much for the, you know, the magnetic field and all of that nonsense. Whoops, I'm going to topple over there. Somebody had it right. My focal point is going the other direction or anything. This might be interesting. This is a little more on that, a little simpler. Direct measurements, this is the argument, direct measurements of the Earth's magnetic field over the past 140 years show a steady and rapid decline. This is what this argument's all about. In its strength, this decay pattern is consistent with the theoretical view that there is an electrical current inside the Earth which produces the magnetic field, and if this view is correct, then 25,000 years ago the electrical current would have been so vast that the Earth's structure couldn't have survived the heat that it produced. This would imply that the Earth could not be older than 25,000 years old. Thomas Barnes, Origin, Destiny of the Earth's Magnetic Field, blah, 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 blah. Response: the argument in general is very weak. The argument made by Barnes is directly false.
I have already written it in expensive critique on Barnes' work, which is found in Talk Origins archives. Barnes' argument is tightly circular and illogical, since it directly assumes the truth of the proposition to be proved. That's what they all do. They assume that what they're setting out to prove is already true. Therefore, they will not really look at the evidence except in a way that they can twist it to show that this is the end result. It's like, well, we know the defendant is guilty. All we have to do is twist and lie about the evidence so that it comes out that way. Barnes' argument is circular and illogical, since it is directly assumes the proposition to be proved. Barnes makes the simplistic mistake of extrapolating an empirical fit to a 100-year data set over a 10,000-year range and claims the extrapolation is valid. Barnes wrongly insists that dynamo action is forbidden by Colling's theorem, ignoring the fact that Colling himself had already proven that it could not be true 15 years before. 15 years before Barnes published his book, a very poor argument. Okay. Now, another argument. This one will be shorter. One of the five biggies, why the Earth has got to be young. Helium in the atmosphere. The compelling thing about this measurement technique is that there are no unknown pathways for escape of helium. Due to its chemical inertness, all old earthers who have studied it recognize the helium issue as a big problem. Evidence. The atmosphere has less than 40,000 years worth of helium. Based on the just production of helium from the decay of uranium and thorium, there is no known means by which a large amount of helium can escape from the Earth's atmosphere. The atmosphere appears to be young. Therefore, the Earth can only be so many thousand years old because helium is dispersed into the atmosphere and it can't leave the atmosphere. And if this has been going on for more than 10,000 years, there'd be a lot more. And if it's going on for 10 million years, there'd be a heck of a lot more. Answer. Directly false. Current observations and measurements show that the rate of helium loss from the atmosphere balances the rate of production through radioactive decay in the crust and the mantle. Cook was unaware of the loss of ionized helium along polar magnetic field lines, as are more currently champions of the same arguments. Details are available. Click here. There are no known ways of escape. There are several. There are actual several. They've found several more. And they are just about in equilibrium. The amount going into the atmosphere is equal to the amount that is going out. It's a bogus. You think that proves the Earth is 6,000 years old? And there was, it's nonsense. Okay. Number four. Old Earth. Wait, I think I have another paper. Wait. There it goes. Yeah, I do have one more on it. Okay. Atmospheric helium. Melvin Cook and others have argued that the Earth's atmosphere has too little helium to be billions of years old. However, a review of Vardaman, that's one of our, where's my picture here? I don't have it anymore. One of our boys, Vardaman, and others, documents show that their arguments are largely based on selective quoting of outdated references from the 60s. Half a century ago. Dalrymple reports a significant portion of this 1900-year document simply repeated old young arguments that have been refuted earlier by Dalrymple. Recent studies such as Lesenden and Reese, Sweetzel and Arkin and so on provide additional information on helium escape mechanisms which further undermine the young Earth arguments on the issue. The final nail in the coffin of the young Earth atmospheric helium argument occurred when NASA satellite images showed helium and other gases being swept from the Earth's atmosphere into deep space. One event occurred on September 25 through 26, 1998, after a solar corona mass emission. See, solar wind blows some of the Earth's atmosphere into space, and solar wind, so on and so forth. Page 5.
Okay. Helium argument. The atmosphere, you can just find these articles all through the internet when you know what you're looking for, you know. There's lots of scientists have dealt with this stuff. Now, will these people answer back to these scientists and show where their calculations are wrong? No. Will they get on the public forum with any of these? No. Will they publish any of their nonsense in any reputable journal for science on Earth? No. Why? Because they'd be laughed to scorn. First, they'd have to correct their mathematical errors. 3 times 6 is not 19. The atmosphere has less than 40,000 years worth of helium based on the just production, so on and so forth. That has some of the material I cover. I don't know that. The young Earth argument goes something like this. Helium-4 is created by radioactive decay, alpha particles in the helium nuclei, and is consistently added to the atmosphere. Helium is not light enough to escape the Earth's gravity, unlike hydrogen, and it will therefore accumulate over time. The current level of helium in the atmosphere would accumulate in less than 200,000 years. Therefore, the Earth is young. I believe this argument was originally put forth by Mormon young earther Melvin Cook. But the helium can and does escape from the atmosphere at rates calculated to be nearly identical to the rate of production. There is. There is no evidence at all that helium-4 either does or can escape from the atmosphere in significant amounts, is what he says. That's in Morris's book. But Morris is wrong. Surely one cannot invent a good dating mechanism by simply ignoring processes which work in the opposite direction of the process with which the date is based upon. Dalrymple says, Banks and Holders has shown that the polar wind can account for an escape of 2 times 4 times 10 to the 6th power of ions, cubic centimeters squared, etc., which is nearly identical to the estimated production flux. Calculations for helium led to similar results, very identical to the estimated production flux, and so on and so forth. I'm piling you up with this stuff so that you see that there is a plethora, a mountain of evidence against everyone, all of these young Earth theories. The Earth was not created 6,000 years ago in 6 days, nor was there a global flood. Now, I'm going to close up here. And are you allowed out of tape, Hector, Denny? Okay, so we'll end the session part with that. I'll just talk to you for a minute or two before we break for lunch. So there's a lot of this stuff. You know, we've only gone through two so far of these. Then we have helium and zircons, dendrochronology, and sodium in the ocean. These are the five biggies, remember? The five biggies. We'll go through all five of them, because this guy says these are the best. These are nonsense. But they're kind of technical, you know. But, you know, these better scientists, they have all these formulas worked out. They know what's going on. They're not bamboozled by such charlatans.
You know, the question arises, why do these reputable men like Steve Austin and Baumgartner and so on that have reputable degree, why do they promote this stuff, which surely I think in the recesses of their mind they have to think, you know, we ain't got much. Why do they do that? I'll tell you why I think they do it. They have rock star status. There are 2 billion Christians who look to them as the great saviors of the scriptures, the last defenders of the Genesis 1 truth that God created. No, they have rock star status and they won't give it up. So, but I'm laying in bed one night about 6 months ago, and I usually pray myself to sleep, and I'm thinking, you know, I got all this technical stuff I'm developing. I got more of it at home. I thought, God, there's got to be a way where I can show people very simply, without getting into helium, you know, diffusion and all of this technical stuff, you know, and then we're going to get a little bit into radiometric dating and all of that stuff. It's just getting, I mean, that's as high as it gets in you know, physics and quantum math and all of that stuff. Isn't there some way to prove to just everyday folks, if the earth is billions of years old and there wasn't a universal flood that wiped out all life on the face of the earth, if that never happened and the earth is billions of years old, is there not a way to be able to prove that without any formulas or any technical know-how, where really a 10 or 12 year old child could understand it if I had a couple minutes to explain it to him? And boom, it hit me right between the eyes. Impact craters. Wow. There's the Barringer crater, or what they call the Arizona crater. It's about a mile in diameter, and it's a pretty good sized hole, and it's a recent one. They think this one hit 49 to 50,000 years ago with the power of 150 atomic bombs. That's how much power is in that. Now, here's what my caption. You are looking at the only proof that you will ever need that the earth is billions of years old and that there never was a global flood. How so? How so? I'll show you. You'll like it. Then, about 3 weeks ago, I called Denny one day. You remember that, Denny? I said, Denny, I got another one. Another what? Another simple proof that the earth is billions of years old. Well, let's not say billions. At least many, many millions, if not billions. Okay. And there never was a global flood. Yeah, what's that? The pyramids. So how can that prove that the earth is billions and millions? These were only created a couple thousand years ago. How can that prove that the earth is millions and millions and millions of years old? And how can that prove there never was a Noah's flood that flooded the entire earth? How can that prove that? It does. It does. It's amazing. It does. I got the proof. I'll show you. I have one other in the book, and that's now this one you can't prove anything about the flood, but you can prove that the earth is billions of years, not millions. In this one you can prove billions.
because this will show you a principle that we can apply to all parts of the sky, all parts of the galaxy. That's a supernova. Okay? And I'll show you how that proves how old the universe is. Now, I was going to actually leave a day early to come up here and meander a little bit longer. How many of you know that there was a good-sized impact crater in Alabama? How many of you knew that? Okay. Well,